However, when the underlying problems have been satisfactorily addressed, the sleep problem may resolve itself. If the youngster is placed in a setting he likes, for example, if he switches from a high school he hates to a vocational program he loves, he may become motivated to get up instead of to stay in bed. In that case, the sleep problem will go away. At first, Anna and her parents were quite reluctant to accept counseling. After a few months, they finally agreed to give it a try, although they found it difficult to discuss their family's troubles openly. Very gradually, they began to understand many of the problems whose existence they had previously denied. Although many issues remain to be settled, the family has made much progress. Anna still does not like school, but she attends regularly. She is not outgoing, but she has made a few tentative efforts toward making friends and is noticeably happier. Relationships within her family have improved. Although Anna still tends to stay up until about 1 in the morning, her sleep phase is now much closer to normal. Chapter 11. Schedule Disorders 2. Other Common Schedule Problems. Not all sleep problems related to a child's sleep schedule involve a shifted sleep phase. This chapter deals with three topics: schedule-related problems that occur despite a regular schedule, problems that can arise when the schedule is irregular or inconsistent, and ways to minimize problems when traveling across time zones. Problems in regular schedules. Besides shifts in the sleep phase, which were discussed in the last chapter, there are a number of other ways even a basically regular schedule can give rise to problems. Since some of these problems can have more than one cause, and since a given cause can lead to more than one kind of problem, there will be some degree of overlap in the sections that follow. The Too Long in Bed Problem. Parents' ideas of how long their children ought to sleep are often based less on biology than on misinformation or wishful thinking. Some families set a single children's bedtime without taking into account that each of their children may have different sleep requirements due to age differences or just normal variation among individuals, or that their children may not all get the same amounts of daytime sleep. Their expectations may be based on what their friends and neighbors tell them. Everyone seems to have a friend or neighbor whose infant or toddler supposedly sleeps far more than their own child does. But these claims are often the result of faulty observations and assumptions. Sometimes parents think that their child sleeps more hours in a day than is, in fact, physiologically possible. The truth is that some children do stay in bed for long hours without calling or crying, but it does not follow that they are asleep the entire time. They may wake at night and look around, play quietly, or just think. Most children pass the early months of life sleep no more than 11 to 13 hours total, including naps. They rarely sleep more than 11 hours at night. If they are napping a couple of hours during the day, they probably won't sleep more than 9 or 10 hours at night. The more they nap, the shorter their nighttime sleep is likely to be. Most school-age children, having given up naps altogether, sleep between 9 and 11 hours at night. So when parents tell me they are having trouble getting their infant or toddler to sleep 12 hours at night, say from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., along with 2 hours of napping, I have to tell them that 14 hours of sleep in a day is not likely. We can adjust their child's sleep so that he has an early bedtime or a late waking, I explain, but not both. When you make your child stay in bed at night for more hours than he can sleep, any of several problems can appear. Like phase shifts, to which they have some similarities, these problems can exist alone or in combination with other problems. Imagine that you have a child of any age who can sleep for no more than 10 hours at night. If you expect or hope that he will get 12 hours of sleep at night, you may be in for trouble. Supposing you set his bedtime at 7 p.m. and expect him to sleep until 7 a.m., what will you see? Several scenarios can develop, depending on whether the beginning, middle, or end of the night is affected. See Figure 11 in your PDF companion. Your child might experience all three problems on the same night or at different times, sometimes having trouble going to sleep, sometimes waking too early, and sometimes lying awake in the middle of the night for long stretches. If your child is young, he may even show a fourth scenario, actually sleeping all 12 hours at night, but then being unable to nap during the day. As you will see, all forms of the too-long-in-bed problem are solved by correcting the timing and distribution of sleep. Whether the nighttime problem appears as trouble falling asleep, waking too early, or an extended nighttime waking, the child is generally getting the amount of sleep he needs at night and no more. You can move that sleep around, but you cannot reasonably expect to get him to sleep longer at night, unless you can cut down on excessive daytime napping. But only eliminate excessive napping. Don't make your child's normal length naps overly short in an attempt to maximize his nighttime sleep. Children are flexible about how their sleep is divided, but only up to a point. Similarly, if your child's only sleep problem is an inability to nap easily or well, then to get more daytime sleep, you may have to shorten his night. Refer to Chapter 12. Trouble falling asleep at bedtime. Suppose your child always takes 2 hours to fall asleep after his 7 p.m. bedtime, and after he finally falls asleep at 9 p.m., he sleeps through until 7 a.m. His sleep phase runs from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., and that means his nighttime sleep requirement is 10 hours. The period from 7 p.m., when you want him to fall asleep, to 9 p.m., when he actually does, falls in his forbidden zone, the one time he absolutely cannot sleep. Refer to Chapter 9. This problem resembles a delayed sleep phase, except that the child still wakes at the desired time in the morning. What actually happens in those 2 hours varies from child to child. As with Adam, Mark, and Lindsay from the previous chapter, who were also being put to bed in their forbidden zone. Your child might cry quietly, demand your attention, or lie in the dark, imagining things. You might only occasionally be aware that he's awake, or you might spend those 2 hours rubbing his back to quiet him. If you see any such pattern in your child, treat the problem by giving him a later bedtime, at least initially. His bedtime should come at the start of his sleep phase so that he can fall asleep quickly. In our example, bedtime would move to 9 p.m., and the child would still sleep until 7 a.m. That should solve the schedule part of the bedtime problem, and any other associated problems can now be addressed. You won't need to do anything more if evenings are now pleasant, your child falls asleep quickly, and you know now that he is getting enough sleep. But if you want him to fall asleep earlier, so you can have some time to yourself in the evening, perhaps, use the same approach we discussed in the preceding chapter for fixing a delayed sleep phase. Gradually move the morning waking earlier, then follow suit with the bedtime. Remember, you must keep to the same schedule 7 days a week, and don't let longer naps during the day take up the lost morning sleep. Waking too early in the morning. Suppose your child falls asleep easily at 7 p.m. as desired, but wakes every morning at 5, ready to start the day. His sleep phase runs from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m., again indicating a 10-hour sleep requirement. It's unfair and unrealistic to force him to stay in bed until 7 a.m. and hope he will go back to sleep. The problem is much like an early sleep phase, differing in that only one end of the sleep phase is earlier than desired, not both. since he usually falls asleep at a desirable hour, and the solution is the same. To eliminate the early waking, you must make bedtime later. You can do this by gradually adjusting the schedule later until your child is sleeping the particular 10 hours you prefer, from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., from 8:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m., or from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. Long middle-of-the-night wakings. Seth was a 2-year-old boy who woke up for 2 hours in the middle of the night every night. He went to bed without difficulty at 7 p.m., he woke at 6:30 a.m., and he took a 2-hour nap after lunch. He liked his crib and went to sleep at night and at nap time without problems. But at about 1 o'clock in the morning, he would wake and start to cry. His parents thought that if they went to comfort him, they would only reinforce bad habits and encourage the wakings, so they looked in on him only occasionally to make sure he wasn't ill. Every night he cried off and on for 1.5 to 2 hours before going back to sleep. Even though his parents were firm and consistent, this pattern continued for several months. Finally, Seth's parents tried bringing him into their bed when he woke up. Now he was happier, at least if he could keep one of them up to play with him. But he did not go back to sleep any faster. In fact, when he did finally get sleepy, he would ask to go back to his crib. At last, his parents started bringing him into the den when he awakened. His mother would put a video on, give him some toys, and try to doze on the sofa until he was ready to go back to sleep. He wasn't crying now, at least, but his sleep was no better, and neither was his mother's. If a child takes one nap a day in addition to his nighttime sleep, his overall sleep is divided into 2 separate segments. On a 2-nap schedule, there are 3 segments, and so on. In young children, the number of sleep segments is fairly flexible. They can move without much difficulty from a 2-to-3-segment schedule or from a 3-to-4-segment schedule. Also, children get their deepest sleep at the start and end of the night. Refer to chapters 2 and 9. Their sleep in the middle of the night can be quite light. Remember, this is true of adults, too. If you wake in the middle of the night, you may notice that you feel more awake than you will when your alarm goes off a few hours later. We've already seen that when a child is put to bed for more hours than he can sleep, he may have trouble falling asleep, or he may wake up too early in the morning. A third possibility is that he may find himself wide awake at some point in the middle of the night. In that case, a child is still getting his required nighttime sleep, but in 2 segments instead of 1. This form of the too long in bed problem is usually seen in children still taking naps. It is sometimes seen in older children, but it is uncommon once they reach school age. If your child follows this pattern, you should realize that he can't be in pain, even if he is crying when he wakes at night, if whenever you pick him up, he becomes happy and wants to play. If you take him into your bed, he won't lie down and go to sleep. Like Seth, he wants your attention. But he is fine if you get up and play with him, or, like Seth's mother, put on a video for him, lie on the sofa, and let him play by himself. After a long period of wakeful activity, perhaps lasting 30 minutes to 3 hours, he goes back to sleep. In my experience, when a child is consistently awake for a long time in the middle of the night, and is happy if he is allowed to do what he wants during that time, the reason is almost always that he is in bed for more hours than he can sleep. It is easy to respond to this situation with the wrong approach. Strategies of setting strict limits, checking at intervals, and simply refusing to respond are all likely to fail, as they did with Seth. Those approaches all presume that the child is capable of sleep at that time. In fact, nothing you do in the middle of the night can solve this problem. The child is not able to sleep at that time of night. He is not even sleepy. To eliminate a long nighttime waking, add up the hours of actual sleep your child gets at night and adjust his bedtime and wake-up time so they are separated by the same number of hours. For instance, if your child gets 10 hours of sleep out of the 12 hours he spends in bed, that means setting his bedtime and wake-up time 10 hours apart. That can be done by putting him to bed 2 hours later, waking him up 2 hours earlier, putting him to bed 1 hour later, and waking him 1 hour earlier, or any other combination that may be convenient, as long as the time between bedtime and wake-up time is 10 hours. Initially, it is better to underestimate the number of hours than to overestimate it, and if your total does turn out to be a little low, then once he is sleeping through the night, you should be able to extend nighttime sleep a little without recreating the problem. If he naps, don't let the naps run any longer than usual. You want to move sleep from the ends of the night to the middle, not into the day. On the other hand, if your child's naps are too long, you would do well to shorten them to a normal length and move some of that sleep into the night as well. Refer to Chapter 12. Only after you have shortened his time in bed is it reasonable to eliminate the middle-of-the-night activities. Seth, as we saw, was spending 11.5 hours in bed at night and another 2 hours during the day, 13.5 hours in all. Since he was awake for 1.5 to 2 hours each night, he was getting a total of 11.5 or 12 hours of sleep, a normal amount for his age. He was waking at night because he simply couldn't sleep 13.5 hours in a day. To fix the problem, we moved his bedtime 2 hours later, keeping his wake-up time and nap times fixed, and then, and only then, eliminated the nighttime videos. Seth's nighttime waking stopped completely within a few days. Most children with this problem behave at night the way Seth did. However, some youngsters are quiet and apparently happy when they wake, so their parents, who hear them at night only occasionally, may assume that these children are asleep more than they really are. Other children wake but remain too sleepy to get up and play. They may lie in bed restlessly or even doze off and on for long stretches before fully returning to sleep. Some children even take to rocking or head-banging to fill up the time. Refer to Chapter 16. Even if your child is quiet during these long wakings, correcting the problem is still probably a good idea, assuming you even know it exists. Just because he is willing to entertain himself for long periods at night doesn't mean he should have to, and in any case, one day this willingness may cease, and a big sleep problem may seem to develop suddenly out of nowhere. All forms of this problem, once you are aware of its cause, can be handled in essentially the same way, by correcting the schedule. Nap problems. If a young child sleeps well at night for more hours than most children his age, then, unless he has an unusually long sleep requirement, he may not have enough sleep drive left to nap well in the daytime. This variation on the too long in bed problem is discussed in the next chapter. Short sleep requirements. Parents often tell me that their child has never needed much sleep. He sleeps only a few hours at night, during the day, or both, they say. This is usually a misperception. There is, of course, variation in sleep requirements, but the range is surprisingly small. See Figure 1 in your PDF companion. It's very rare to find a normal 9-month-old who really needs only 8 hours of sleep at night and 1 hour during the day, or a 4-year-old who needs only 7 or 8 hours total. A child who truly has a short sleep requirement may be asked to spend more time in bed than he can sleep, and for that reason, the too long in bed problems described in the previous sections could certainly develop. But for most children, a short sleep requirement is almost never the actual explanation of these or any other sleep problems. So I usually start by assuming the child has a normal sleep requirement and normal sleep ability, and see if I can prove myself wrong. Often when I add up the parents' reports of their child's day and nighttime sleep hours, it becomes clear that the child actually gets a normal amount of sleep. Sometimes parents have an inflated idea of what normal sleep really is. In many other cases, the child is getting more sleep than his parents think he is. If they have to get up 3 times a night to get him back to sleep, they may end up very sleep-deprived and assume their child is too. If they have to go to their child every hour, they may assume incorrectly that he never sleeps between their visits. They may not even realize that they themselves fall asleep between his calls. Finally, it's often the case that the nights they remember most clearly are their child's most difficult nights, when he really did not get very much sleep. Nights when he slept well are easily forgotten. When home life provides too little regular structure, with inadequate or inappropriate parental control and poor limit setting, inconsistent schedules, anxiety, or general chaos, total sleep time may truly be shortened. But it doesn't follow that the child is truly a short sleeper and is getting all the sleep he needs. If we can help the family restore order and a sense of support and control, normal hours of sleep and a much happier child will usually reappear. How much sleep is enough? Requirements vary from person to person, of course, but if a child is getting enough sleep, he functions well during the day without signs of sleepiness. He wakes spontaneously, or at least easily, in the morning and from naps. He will not appear sleepy, except, of course, before naps and at bedtime, and he will not act overtired at other times, refer to Chapter 1, except perhaps at the afternoon dip, refer to Chapter 9. His behavior, attention span, and mood will not improve markedly when he happens to have slept longer than usual the previous night. For us to say that a child's total sleep requirement truly is short, he must sleep less than most children his age, no matter what the circumstances. A child who gets a normal amount of sleep in his preferred circumstances does not have a short sleep requirement. If he falls asleep quickly when you rub his back, if he sleeps through the night when you stay with him, if he goes back to sleep when you take him into your bed after he wakes, or if he naps readily in the car, and if he gets a normal amount of sleep when you do these things, then the problem lies not in his sleep requirement, but rather in his habits, associations, and fears, his ability to keep himself awake when circumstances are not to his liking, and the limits you are or are not setting for him. For help with these problems, refer to Chapters 4 through 7. Similarly, if he is obviously happier and better behaved on days when he has had more than his usual short sleep, then his sleep requirement is probably normal. If your child really is one of the rare individuals who require unusually little sleep, and there is no underlying medical or psychological problem, do not medicate him to try to get him to sleep more than he needs to. Nor should you insist that he stay in bed longer than he can sleep. This situation can be difficult for you as parents because your child may have to go to bed later, get up earlier, or nap less than would be convenient or restful for you. Still, if his time in bed is shortened to match his ability to sleep, most of his sleep problems, other than the short sleep, should resolve themselves, and those that persist will now be treatable. Environmental disturbances, noise, and people. Problems can occur when a child is wakened early by light or noise that he perceives as a sign that morning has arrived. You can block sunlight from entering the room, but street sounds are harder to control. Some children wake when they hear their parents getting up and simply will not go back to sleep. It's not hard for these children to wake an hour or two early. By then they have completed most of their nighttime sleep, and that component of the drive to sleep, the homeostatic factor, is weaker than it was earlier in the night. These environmental disturbances can affect a child's sleep-wake rhythms. If your child is regularly awakened and exposed to early light, he may develop an early sleep phase. If the morning disruptions are frequent enough, he will begin to anticipate them and wake spontaneously just before dawn or just before the family gets up. This can be a challenging problem. Some parents resort to sneaking out in the morning and showering at night or when they get to work. If you are struggling with this kind of situation, there are some steps you can take. You may be able to reduce the disturbances themselves. Use room-darkening shades and perhaps curtains to block out light. Insulating curtains will also help to mute sounds from outside. You may have to shut the windows as well. Sometimes it is helpful to move the child to a quieter bedroom, perhaps switching rooms with a sibling who sleeps more soundly. Although I usually recommend against the use of gadgetry, machines that produce constant soft background noise, such as fans, humidifiers, or white noise generators, can help mask occasional loud noises from outside, especially those occurring in the early morning. Unless these machines seem to offer the only solution, though, I recommend avoiding them. Children need to sleep under natural conditions, and if they become dependent on the background sounds from these machines, they may have trouble sleeping in quieter surroundings. You can also try shifting your child to a later sleep phase, following the guidelines given in the preceding chapter. The rationale is that if you showered at an earlier point in his sleep, perhaps at 3 in the morning instead of at 5 or 6, he would be too sleepy to get up. Fortunately, you can get the same effect by moving your child's sleep schedule later instead of moving up your own morning schedule. Now the morning disturbances will fall earlier in his sleep phase when he has had much less sleep, and he will be more likely to sleep through them. Evening noise can be a more difficult problem than morning noise. It can be hard for a child to fall asleep when people are laughing and yelling in the next room. The house need not be silent. It's okay to watch television at a low volume, for example, but do keep things relatively quiet long enough for your child to fall asleep. Once he is sound asleep, he will soon be difficult to wake, at least for several hours. As long as his bedtime is properly set and he is ready for sleep, this need not be a major burden. Sometimes a parent comes home just as a child is going to bed or before he has fallen asleep. The parent may want to spend some time with the child, and the child, wide awake again and excited at seeing the parent, may want to stay up later. If this parent always comes home around bedtime, the child may try to stay up every night and wait. The best solutions are for the parent to come home either early enough to spend some time with the child before his bedtime, or, less ideally, late enough that the child is already sound asleep, or to shift the child's sleep phase earlier or later to get the same result. Usually there is less noise and activity to disrupt sleep in the middle of the night than at the ends, but they may be present. For instance, suppose a child always has to be moved late at night, perhaps when he is brought home after falling asleep elsewhere. Usually that will not cause a big problem. Children either sleep through the move or return to sleep promptly afterward. But if the child regularly wakes and cannot return to sleep easily, then it may help to bring him home earlier or later, or to shift his sleep phase so that the disruption occurs in a part of his sleep cycle when his sleep is less easily disturbed. Also, if a child is on an exceptionally late or early schedule, a parent's arrival late at night or departure early in the morning can coincide with the child's normal period of relatively light sleep that comes in the middle of his night. If the noise usually awakens the child then, you can use the same techniques that you would try if this happened earlier in the evening or later in the morning, trying to be as quiet as possible. Considering moving your child's sleep schedule to make him less likely to wake at these times, or, if necessary, using a fan or other source of continuous background sound to help mask the parent's activity. The television or computer or phone problem. Young children are often willing to trade sleep for cartoons. If they are free to watch television immediately upon waking, they will probably choose to get up early for cartoons over returning to sleep for their last sleep cycle. Although they may doze in front of the television, this sleep will be of poor quality. As mentioned in the preceding chapter, even children who are difficult to wake for school are somehow able to get up for cartoons on the weekend. It is never a good idea to go right from bed to television. Besides being a habit that can directly cause insufficient sleep, it is also one that can leave a child and his biological clock confused about when morning really starts, and this in turn can lead to irregularity and unpredictability in his sleep schedule. Listen to the next section. For these reasons, it is best not to allow your child to watch any television for the first hour or two in the morning, at least until an hour late enough to allow him to completely finish sleeping. It's a particularly bad idea and an unnecessary temptation to let your child have a television in his room. If he has one, now is the time to remove it. If cartoons are no longer available to him on weekend mornings, he will probably choose to stay asleep. Older children often have a similar problem, but at the other end of the night. They stay up late to watch television, use the computer, or talk on the phone. The late-night shows they watch and the websites they surf are likely to be even less appropriate for them than some of the cartoons can be for younger children. Unlike as with a book, which becomes difficult to read when you are sleepy, and which you can put down today and pick up again tomorrow, you can watch television even when you are bleary-eyed with fatigue, and most programs are designed to keep you watching to the end, with teasers encouraging you to watch the next show. Talking on the phone doesn't even require you to keep your eyes open. If you fight off the first wave of sleepiness to see the end of a show or to keep talking, you may have a half hour or so until the next wave hits, and by then another show or another subject may have caught your interest. Just as television should not be a child's first activity in the morning, it should not be his last activity at night. Set a time at which the television is turned off. Make similar rules for the computer and the phone. While your child gets used to this change, others in the house may temporarily have to give up some television as well. Reading or listening to stories is a far better activity with which to end the day. Again, letting your child have a television in his room is particularly unwise. Even an older child should not watch television alone in his room at night. Late-night programs are geared for adults and may stimulate emotions in the child he does not yet fully understand and may find upsetting, confusing, or frightening. If you don't supervise his viewing, you may be unaware of what he is being exposed to. Don't make late-night television a special weekend privilege either. If there are shows you'd like to allow your child to see that are on too late, get in the habit of recording them and watch them, ideally together, at a more reasonable time on another day. Some children get up to watch television in the middle of the night. This is not terribly common, but it can happen if you allow it, especially if the television is in the child's room. Even very young children know how to turn the television on. Children who exhibit this behavior usually fall asleep watching television. When they wake during the night, they want to resume their viewing. This development becomes more likely if the child is free to make up the lost sleep by sleeping late in the morning, or by napping excessively, or at the wrong hours in the daytime. Needless to say, middle-of-the-night television should not be allowed for any reason. The child should not have access to a television during the night. It should be impossible for him to watch television at night without your knowing about it. If necessary, unplug your televisions at night or keep them in rooms where you can control access. Finally, as described earlier in this chapter, enforce a proper bedtime, morning wake-up time, and daytime naps so the hole in the middle of the night can close up. Irregular and inconsistent sleep-wake schedules. Many of the children I see have difficulty sleeping because their sleep-wake patterns are irregular. They fall asleep early one night and late the next. They wake at odd hours, and they never nap at the same time 2 days in a row. Meal times are equally inconsistent. If you are not sure whether this description fits your child, chart his schedule using Figure 5 in your PDF companion for a week or two. You may be surprised by what you find. If his schedule is irregular, then in all probability his circadian rhythms are also disrupted. Refer to Chapter 9. His body temperature may be rising when he goes to bed and falling when he gets up, the opposite of what should be happening. He may be hungry between meals or when he should be sleeping, and not hungry at meal times. He may be active when he should be napping, and sluggish when he should be playing. He may have difficulty falling asleep at bedtime, if he has a bedtime, and he may wake during the night. It is important to realize that this problem differs, at least in part, from the bedtime difficulties and nighttime wakings described in chapters 4 through 7. There may be stretches of time, hours even, during which your child cannot fall asleep or return to sleep, no matter what you do. Like a child either sent to bed in his forbidden zone or kept in bed more hours than he can sleep, he is unable to sleep because his sleep-wake rhythm is in the waking phase. However, when a child's schedule is disorganized, these wakeful periods can appear at different times night to night. For the same reasons, periods of daytime sleepiness or crankiness can appear unpredictably from day to day. Children's daily rhythms can only be established and maintained in a consistent 24-hour pattern if they are regulated by events that occur at the same times every day. Although regular exposure to light is the only stimulus known to directly control our biological clocks, other regularly occurring events can affect the amount and timing of exposure we get. If your child naps late in the day, he may be able to stay up later at night and be exposed to light later than usual. This extra light adjusts his clock later. If he misses a nap and falls asleep early, the opposite may occur. He gets less evening light and his clock moves earlier. If his meals are irregular, poorly timed hunger signals may leave him awake and exposed to light at an inappropriate hour. If your child does not have reasonably consistent daily routines, his system has no way to know when he should be asleep and when he should be awake. The result is that his sleep-wake patterns deteriorate. If he sometimes goes to sleep at 9 o'clock and sometimes at 6, then when he goes to bed at 6, his body does not know whether to expect a late nap or an early bedtime, and therefore whether he should sleep 1 hour or 10. His sleep patterns become disorganized into irregular fragments, none of which even approximate the 10 or more continuous hours of sleep a young child should have at night. Whereas normal nighttime sleep is interrupted only by brief arousals and the return to sleep is rapid, the child without a clear schedule may sometimes wake at night completely for long periods, and his daytime naps may sometimes be unusually long. James, for example, was a 4-year-old boy whose sleep problems were difficult to characterize because they were so erratic. He had no formal bedtime and no regular bedtime routines. He went to sleep at any time between 7 and 11 o'clock, whenever he got sleepy, which depended to some extent on if and when he had napped that day. He fell asleep sometimes in his own bed, but more often wherever he happened to be, usually in the living room with the lights and television on. When James fell asleep on the early side, he sometimes woke an hour or two later and would not go back to sleep for several hours. Other times he would sleep for 9 or 10 hours and then find himself wide awake at 4 or 5 in the morning. On the days that followed these early wakings, he usually took a long nap and then stayed wide awake until 11 at night. He might still wake early the next morning, but he would be grumpy and might doze off and on during the day, or even fall asleep so deeply that his parents could not wake him. When he did nap, it could be as early as 9 a.m., as late as 6 p.m., or anywhere in between, and his naps could be as short as 30 minutes or as long as 4 hours. James's unstructured sleep habits mirrored a lack of structure in his home, which was not caused by family problems or any lack of caring on his parents' part. It was a style commonplace in his family's community. Irregular meal times and bedtimes were quite usual and unremarkable in the family and among their friends. These irregularities did not bother James's parents in the daytime, but they were concerned about his wakings at night. They did not see the connection. When the family sought my help, I learned that in addition to the absence of a consistent schedule, James had no customary routines to guide him in getting ready for bed and falling asleep. It was clear that his parents needed to establish a bedtime ritual that was pleasant and consistent. But better bedtime routines alone, even if they came at the same time each night, would not solve James's sleep problems. He also needed more order in his haphazard daily schedule. The fundamental problem was that, without any regular cues to guide it, James's 24-hour sleep-wake pattern had become badly disrupted. Although this problem sounds severe, the solution was actually simple and straightforward. Correcting an irregular schedule. Setting up and sticking to a regular schedule is a necessary step toward solving this kind of sleep problem, whether the irregular schedule is the main problem, as it was with James, or just one factor complicating other problems. If the irregular schedule is the only problem, that may be all you need to do. For the first few weeks, keep your child on a fairly strict timetable for going to sleep, getting up, and eating. Once things are going well, you can try being more flexible, within reason. But remember, if your child's schedule has been unstructured in the past, it can revert easily if you are not careful. If you are not sure how long your child can sleep at night, start with the smallest amount you are sure he can achieve. It is much better to err on the lower end than the higher, because that will make it easier for him to sleep at the times you set, making it in turn easier for you to enforce the new schedule. If your child is at an age when he should still be napping, add suitable naps to the schedule as well. Refer to chapters 2 and 12. If you are not sure whether he needs a nap, try eliminating it. If you are not sure whether he needs one nap or two, try starting with just one. When his sleep settles into a regular pattern, it will become clear whether he needs more sleep. If so, you can gradually lengthen his time in bed at night, add new naps, or lengthen existing naps. James's parents agreed to set up a daily schedule for him that included a regular bedtime and wake-up time. There was to be no daytime sleep, as he was too old for regular naps. They instituted a bedtime routine that they felt would suit them. In addition, they agreed to provide his meals at the same times every day, whether he was hungry or not, and not to feed him at other times except for appropriate snacks. Although these decisions were out of keeping with the relatively unstructured way of life they were accustomed to, they willingly accepted the changes once they understood that James would sleep better at night and probably feel better during the day. Since James was usually asleep by 9 p.m. on days when he did not nap, we decided to start his bedtime there. We could certainly have started later if we weren't sure about that time. He would go to bed every night at 9 after a story or a quiet game. If he was still asleep at 6 in the morning, his parents would wake him for the day, dress him, and give him breakfast. He was not to sleep during the daytime at all. If he did fall asleep, his parents were to wake him as soon as possible, within 10 or 15 minutes at most. James probably needed a total of more than 9 hours of sleep, but I wanted to start with a sleep schedule I knew he could achieve. Once he was sleeping well on this schedule, then we could begin moving his bedtime earlier or his wake-up time later, in adjustments of 15 minutes, as long as he was falling asleep quickly at night and he had to be wakened in the morning. His parents also began making sure that he always slept in his own room, not in the living room. When he wakened during the night, they would go to him, but they wouldn't allow him to get up and play, since that would only reinforce the habit of waking. They were to insist that he stay in bed at bedtime and after wakings during the night, even though at first he had trouble falling asleep at some of these times. They could sit with him, but quietly, without much conversation. Once James's sleep rhythm had normalized and he could consistently fall asleep quickly, which I told his parents to expect within a week or two, they were no longer to stay with him when he woke. However, I asked that they delay this step until it became clear that except for brief wakings, he was in fact able to sleep the full time his schedule called for. We planned to enforce this rule with the methods discussed in the chapters on associations and limit setting, refer to chapters 4 and 5, but those measures proved unnecessary. James was never especially demanding, even when he was awake, and he had never really associated his parents' presence with falling asleep anyway. The family was able to follow through because they now understood the importance of a good daytime structure. Because they found it helpful to chart his sleep patterns, they continued to do so for 2 months, well beyond the few weeks I had asked for. Like most parents, they found it easier to stay consistent when they could see their child's progress in black and white. James resisted the changes for the first week, but his parents held firm and were careful to be supportive. Soon, both he and his parents began to look forward to the period before bed. It became an opportunity for a closeness they had not enjoyed before. By the end of the second week, James was falling asleep easily at a regular bedtime and sleeping through the night. It soon became apparent that he could sleep longer than 9 hours, so his parents gradually shifted him to a schedule that ran from 8:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. Disrupted schedules usually happen because parents have not understood the importance of consistent daily routines. Occasionally, though, the disorganization and loss of structure stems from underlying family problems. When issues such as marital strife, physical or psychiatric illness, death, separation, and divorce are involved, parents may be unable or unwilling to enforce a normal schedule for their children. In these situations, I always urge the family to seek counseling. Travel. Parents often wonder what to expect and what to do when traveling with children to different time zones. Understanding the effect such travel has on your child's sleep pattern and learning to plan for it should help avoid worry and limit problems. Neither children nor adults can adjust instantly from one time zone to another. However, children find the transition easier to make than adults do. The homeostatic drive to sleep, which makes you get sleepier the longer you stay awake, is very powerful in children, especially young children, and it can even overcome the stimulating effects of the circadian drive, which helps you wake in the morning, keeps you awake all day, and gives you a second wind in the early evening. If your child is not permitted to sleep when he expects to, he will be better able than you will be to make up the lost sleep at times when he would normally be awake. Suppose you travel west by 3 time zones. Your child will want to go to sleep and wake 3 hours earlier than usual according to the new local time. If you keep him up until the local clock says it is his usual bedtime, then instead of waking 3 hours earlier than usual local time, the next morning He will sleep closer until when the local clock says it is his usual wake-up time. Conversely, if you travel east, your child will go to sleep and want to wake later than usual, but if you wake him in the morning 3 hours earlier than he would like, when the local clock says he should be waking, then that night he will be able to fall asleep much earlier than the night before. In both cases, if the changes don't happen the first day, they usually will by the second or third. As always, it's important to limit daytime napping to the usual amount, so sleep lost at one end of the night will be moved to the other end. When traveling across time zones with children, most people make the necessary changes without even thinking about them, because of expectations driven by activities, meals, and other obligations. If you are traveling west, 1 to 3 time zones. Try to keep your child awake until the correct bedtime in the new time zone. If the change is too large to accomplish on the first night, do it gradually over 2 to 3 days. Be aware that you may have to get up early with your child for a day or two. If he usually wakes at 7 a.m. in New York, he may wake at 4 a.m. on the first day in California. It's not fair to leave him crying for 3 hours in the morning just because he hasn't fully adjusted to the new time zone. In any case, you will probably wake up early yourself for the same reason. Allow only the usual amount of napping. Initially, your child will want to nap too early in the day. Try to delay his naps as much as you are delaying his bedtime. Consider moving bedtime and nap time somewhat later than usual, beginning a few days before you travel. That will reduce the adjustment you have to make once you arrive, and it may prevent the very early wakings. If the trip is short, you could choose to let your child continue to operate according to his home time zone, especially if you're only traveling 1 or 2 time zones, or if your child usually goes to sleep and wakes up late. Thus, if he sleeps from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. in New York, he would sleep from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. while in Denver. Naps should be adjusted similarly. When you return to New York, he can go right back to the usual schedule without any readjustment. If you are traveling east, 1 to 3 time zones. Your child may not be able to fall asleep until later than usual for the first day or two, and there is no point in making him try. You do not want him lying in bed wide awake and frustrated on his first night in a new place. If he usually goes to sleep at 8 p.m. in California, he may not be able to fall asleep until 11 p.m. in New York. In fact, it would be counterproductive to let him fall asleep at 8 o'clock on the first night in New York, because since that's only 5 o'clock in California, he could treat that sleep as only a late nap, and then be awake much of the night. Wake your child at the correct wake-up time in the new time zone. If the change seems too large to accomplish the first morning, do it gradually over 2 or 3 days. Allow only the usual amount of napping. Naps, like bedtime, may initially tend to run late by the amount of the time change. Try to move the naps earlier to match the earlier wake-up times. If the trip is short, you could choose to let your child continue to operate according to his home time zone. Thus, if he sleeps from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. in California, he would sleep from 11 p.m. to 9 a.m. while in New York. Naps should be adjusted similarly. When you return to California, he can go right back to the usual schedule without any readjustment. If you are traveling across more than 3 or 4 time zones, for instance, between the United States and Europe or Asia, children handle these larger changes more easily than their parents do. Although the details can be confusing, most parents find that their children adapt quickly on their own. There is no need to make elaborate plans. You cannot force your child to sleep when he is not sleepy, but you can keep him awake when he should be awake in the new time zone. he will self-correct quickly, making up the lost sleep at proper times for the new time zone. If you wake him when he is sleeping at the wrong times, he will want to sleep at the right times. The rest will take care of itself. If that is all you remember, you will be successful. Simply be aware that if you travel east, your child may fall asleep much later than usual at first and have to be wakened in the morning. Traveling west, he may want to fall asleep earlier than usual, and you may have to keep him awake. In either case, the times he wants to sleep or stay awake may seem erratic for a day or two. He could be up much of the first night and want to sleep much of the first day. These problems should all resolve themselves within a few days. The changes are particularly easy to make for a young child who still naps. He already sleeps both in the daytime and at night, getting his sleep in several widely separated time segments. Instead of having to shift his sleeping schedule by 6 to 12 hours, he may only need to adjust by a few hours, if that. If you limit his sleep in the daytime, he will quickly increase the sleep he gets at night. If the original nap periods now fall at night, they can lengthen and perhaps combine to become the new nighttime sleep. And if the original nighttime sleep period now falls in the day, that sleep can shorten and perhaps split to become the new nap or naps. If your child is too old for regular naps, he, like you, will have to shift his schedule the full amount. Still, as long as you do not let him sleep during the day, or at least limit it as much as possible, his inability to get enough sleep the first night or two will be enough to force his sleep into the next night, and when this happens, to put him on a correct local schedule. Chapter 12. Naps. All children nap, at least up to a certain age. When people tell me that their child never napped, it may be that the naps were always difficult, short, or unpredictable, or that the child could never be put down for a formal nap. But it cannot be true that he never slept during the day, even if just for a few minutes here and a few minutes there. The same parents typically will report that their child actually did sleep during the day, but only in the car, or just in the stroller on the way back from the playground, or not at home, but every day at daycare. Charting your child's sleep patterns, see Figure 5 in your PDF companion, may reveal that he is getting daytime sleep that you were unaware of. In the newborn, sleeping and waking occur in shorter and longer periods spread over the whole 24-hour day. By the time a baby is 3 months old, day and night should be well differentiated, with most sleep occurring at night. The daytime should be settling into an increasingly predictable pattern of wakeful periods and naps. By 3 or 4 months, a baby should be taking 3 naps a day, long ones in the mid-morning and the mid-afternoon, and a short one in the evening. The evening nap is usually given up at around 6 months of age. Most children give up one of the 2 remaining naps around the time of their first birthday, or within the next few months. Although some children seem to drop a nap one day and never go back to it, most first go through a few weeks of intermittently skipping one nap or the other, or at least having trouble falling asleep at one of them. Listen to the following section, Trouble Giving Up a Nap, Transition Problems. And most children do not simply drop one of the naps. Rather, they replace both of the naps with a single new one at an intermediate time. For instance, a child who was napping at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. will likely switch to a single nap after lunch. Even though a nap is lost, the child's total sleep time usually changes little. Either the new nap is longer than either of the original 2 were, or the child sleeps longer at night to compensate. At this point, getting the child to fall asleep may well become easier at bedtime as well as for the remaining nap, because he is now staying awake for longer stretches between periods of sleep. Staying awake longer increases the drive to sleep, and that makes falling asleep easier. The final nap will disappear eventually as well, but when it will happen is less predictable than it is for the others. Most children stop napping altogether between their third and fourth birthdays, but some two-year-olds have already given up their last nap, and some children continue napping until the start of kindergarten. Similar to the dropping of his second nap, your child may give up his last nap fairly suddenly, abruptly starting to stay awake all day, or he may gradually have more difficulty falling asleep at nap time, so that some days he falls asleep and some days he doesn't. Napping habits and tendencies differ widely among individual children. Some children love their naps and always go to sleep willingly, while others, preferring to stay awake having fun, fight each and every nap. Some children can miss a nap or nap at the wrong time without any apparent impact on their mood, behavior, or schedule. They are fine the rest of the day, and they go to sleep at the usual time that night. Others will be miserable all day, and their nighttime sleep will be affected. If they skipped a nap, they may go to sleep for the night earlier than usual, and if they napped unusually late, they may not be able to fall asleep at their usual bedtime. For a few children, happily not very many, any change in the nap schedule seems to disrupt both daytime and nighttime sleep for as long as a week. Similarly, children vary in their tolerance for napping in different places and under different circumstances. Some children are very flexible. They nap equally well in the crib, in bed, in the car, or in the stroller. Other children's naps are more rigidly dependent on a particular setting or condition. If a child sometimes naps in the car, for instance, he may have difficulty napping anywhere else. Parents of these children sometimes resort to such unfortunate habits as driving their youngsters around every day at nap time, occasionally even parking the car in the driveway and leaving the child there to finish the nap with the motor running. Fortunately, most children are at least somewhat flexible regarding the specific times and circumstances of their naps. Just how much variation your child can tolerate can be determined only by trial and error. It is usually easier to treat a sleep problem that occurs at night than one that occurs during the day, because children get sleepier and sleepier as the night goes on until they finally must fall asleep. If you are helping your child learn to associate new habits with falling asleep at night, you will succeed if you wait long enough, even if he is stubborn. However, during the day, the drive to sleep comes and goes. After a midday dip in alertness, your toddler's circadian system wakes him up and moves him toward his forbidden zone when he will be wide awake. Refer to Chapter 9. If you are trying to enforce new patterns at nap time, you may not succeed completely, especially if your child is nearly old enough to give up the nap in question anyway. You cannot, or at least you should not, keep a toddler in bed or in his crib all day, waiting for him to fall asleep. Teaching new patterns at nap time is easier in infants, since their drive to sleep during the day at each of their nap times remains very strong. If you are having trouble with your child's naps, or if you're worried about them, there are a number of possible factors to consider. In addition to the causes of sleep problems discussed in other chapters, and a number of things you may be able to do. Problems with the length and timing of naps. Solving many common napping problems is merely a matter of adjusting nap times, or altering the lengths of naps or of nighttime sleep. Think of naps not as isolated sleep periods, unrelated to other naps and nighttime sleep, but rather as part of a full day's schedule, in which each sleep period influences all the other ones. Nighttime sleep affects naps, naps affect nighttime sleep, and naps affect other naps. As you will see, children are adept at moving periods of sleep around. Although the total amount of sleep they get does not change much, the hours when they sleep can and do. Hidden naps. Because children are able to divide their sleep into a variable number of segments and to move sleep between day and night, the line between nighttime sleep and daytime naps can become unclear. Where you draw the line can affect how you interpret your child's schedule, and, in turn, how you approach his problem. An example of this situation might be a 5-month-old who at first glance goes to sleep at 6 p.m. after a feeding, gets up at 7:30 a.m., and naps twice a day. This child is a bit young to have only 2 naps, and 13.5 hours is an unusually long night for almost any child. Furthermore, on this schedule, his sleep is disrupted. After going to bed for the night, he regularly wakes up fussing at 7:30 p.m., and it takes an hour for his parents to settle him, nurse him again, and get him back to sleep. He may nurse briefly 1 or 2 more times during the night. At 5:30 a.m., he wakes again for an hour, then he goes back to sleep until 7:30, when he gets up for the day. His morning nap at 10 is short, and he has trouble falling asleep then. His afternoon nap at 2 is more successful. One way to view this problem is to see the child as having a broken 13.5-hour night and 2 daytime naps, suggesting that the cause of his sleep difficulties is that he is in bed too long at night, and his total time in bed is more hours than he can sleep. Listen to the too long in bed problem in Chapter 11. But there is another related way to look at this child's schedule. According to this other interpretation, he sleeps only 9 hours a night, from 8:30 p.m. to 5:30 a.m., and in addition to his mid-morning and mid-afternoon naps, he naps for 1.5 hours in the evening, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., and again for 1 hour in the early morning, from 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. Now the situation appears quite different. Instead of a child who naps too little and suffers from disrupted sleep at night, we see a child who takes too many naps, 4 a day, and consequently has trouble falling asleep at night and wakes early in the morning. Although both interpretations are valid, viewing the problem the second way may make it easier to understand and to find a solution. If your child regularly wakes up for a while, either after a short period of sleep early in the night or before the final stretch of sleep in the morning, it may be useful to think of these wakeful periods as dividing a late night or early morning nap from his main nighttime sleep period. Now, if you more completely separate these naps from the nighttime by moving the late nap earlier or the early nap later, even if it seems to make the night shorter than you had hoped for, both nighttime sleep and naps likely will improve. Listen to too much napping during the day and too little sleep at night, too many short naps, the naplet problem, napping too early, and napping too late in the discussion that follows. Too little napping during the day and too much sleep at night. A child who has difficulty napping in the daytime commonly sleeps very well at night, regularly getting perhaps 11 hours or more. During the day, it is hard to get a child of this sort to nap, and when he does nap, often it is for no more than 30 minutes. If this description fits your child, he may be getting almost all his required sleep at night. Most young children with the same overall sleep requirement as your child will sleep fewer hours at night, 9.5 hours, say, and nap longer during the day, possibly taking a 2-hour nap or 2 1-hour naps. But because your child sleeps so well at night, he feels little drive to sleep during the day. If the only problem is that your child's naps are brief, you may not need to do anything. However, often children function poorly on such short naps, even if they are sleeping an adequate amount overall. They are not sleepy enough to nap longer during the day, but at the same time they are too sleepy to behave well, and are likely to be cranky instead. Other reasons to change this pattern can be that the brief naps are inconvenient, or that you have difficulty getting your child to fall asleep, even for those naps he does take. If you're in any of these situations, you may have to start reducing your child's sleep at night. Try cutting back his nighttime sleep by 30 to 60 minutes, even by as much as 2 hours if necessary, though it's rarely appropriate to shorten the night to less than 9 hours. You can make this change all at once or gradually over several days, and you can do it by making his bedtime later, waking him up earlier, or both. Don't worry if you have to shorten the night too much at first to get results. You can always add some time back later. Remember, you are not trying to eliminate any sleep, just to shift some of it from the night to the day. Too much napping during the day and too little sleep at night. If your child sleeps a great deal during the day, you may be worried that something is wrong. Even if you're glad that he takes such long naps, you might be troubled if he also sleeps too little at night. You may think that his poor nighttime sleep is causing him to sleep longer during the day. But the reverse is more probably true. The excessive daytime napping is probably interfering with his sleep at night. For instance, when parents report that their infant or toddler sleeps only 6.5 or 7 hours at night, they are also likely to describe daily naps totaling 4 to 6 hours, an unusually large number. Even when this child gets only 4 hours of daytime sleep, he is still sleeping 10.5 or 11 hours total.